In today's episode, Elon Musk dug a hole in the ground, everything scrubbed in the rocket world, and some Easter eggs in Teslas. Let's go. Hey, and welcome to the Our Ludicrous Future podcast. This is where we talk about all the cool technology and stuff that's changing our world to make our future totally ludicrous. I'm Joe Scott from the Answers with Joe YouTube channel. With me is Tim Dodd.
Hi, it's me, Tim Dodd, the everyday astronaut from all of those things that you might participate in on the internet. And then, of course, this week we also have Ben.
What's up, guys? It's Ben Sullins from Teslanomics. How are we doing, fellas?
I'm great.
Yeah.
Full of holiday cheer.
Yeah, tis the season.
Oh, I got a quick story. Speaking of holiday cheer and being great, so Iowa typically in December, there's normally this white stuff all over the ground called snow. I have ran every day this week in shorts and a sweatshirt. It's been like 50s.
I thought you were going to brag that you're doing that in the snow, and I was like, well, you know.
Yeah, less impressed now.
Yeah,
like, that guy.
I am putting my life at risk by underdressing for the season. No, it's just unseasonably warm here, and I will take it.
First off, thank you for the description for those of us that aren't familiar with this concept. But I'm also...
San Diego's not very common.
Yeah, yet. I'm also wondering what... have you heard of the Wim Hof method? This guy that like does all this crazy cold stuff. I feel like, Joe, you need to do a video about this guy if you've not done one already.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, so he's some guy that apparently can control his body temperature through like meditation or something. And so he holds all these crazy records of like running a marathon barefoot in Antarctica, stuff like that. And you're like, what is going on? And somehow he survives it, and they've studied him, and they can't explain it. But like he literally is mentally able to increase or like control his body temperature, essentially. And so he has this whole like method of cold exposure, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know.
Either he's super evolved or very, very underdeveloped. One of the two.
It's wild.
I've got this method called putting on a coat and not going where it's cold.
Yeah. Well, I'm in on that second one. Yeah. It was pretty cold the other night, though, in Los Angeles. Oh, geez. Was that last night? That was last...
No, wow. Two nights ago now.
Yeah, sorry.
Tell us about that. Why were you in Los Angeles?
So I was there for this hole in the ground that Elon Musk dug for him and his rich friends to drive their cars through. And it was a party. It's the Boring Company official launch event. The party was spectacular, as always. They were able to cater these chicken sandwiches, which are fantastic, from Hal and Ray's. Apparently, it's a style called Nashville Hot Chicken, I think it's called. It's like an actual style. But in L.A., it's like a three-hour wait to get into this place, and they had them just lined up there. So I may have eaten a week's worth of calories in that one city. And I knew about that because when I was there, I met another YouTuber you guys may have heard of, Mr. Casey Neistat. So we were hanging out, eating chicken sandwiches, talking about this fun stuff. So there's a bunch of people there, a bunch of other YouTubers. Had a good time. Didn't get to ride in the tunnel because there were too many people. And I think there were only like three cars taking people. And each time took like 15 minutes or something like that. Because the paving on the road through the tunnel wasn't perfect. They said the machine messed up. So apparently you'd get to like halfway there and have to go like 10 miles an hour like through these crazy bumpy. So anyways... there was a lot of stuff that was unveiled, though, that I think is worth mentioning if people aren't following or haven't seen this. So
Hold on. Before we jump into that, because we need to really do a big dive on that, I got to know. So Casey Neistat is obviously one of the biggest like social media influencers and one of the biggest people. What's he like in real life? What was that like?
He's a normal dude. Like, we sat there. He showed me some footage he'd shot for his vlog earlier. He wouldn't shut up about the chicken sandwiches until I ate one, and then I realized why. And then I was running around telling everyone else to eat them. You know,
but
we
like,
talked.
Is he just surrounded constantly? Is everyone just like,
yeah,
yeah? I would get so annoyed with that.
Yeah, it definitely.
It's pretty annoying.
It definitely was a little bit. Yeah. Thanks, Joe. For those of us. yeah. So it was definitely an interesting thing, right? So. Obviously, he is like this crazy level of famous. And there were other famous people there, like Diplo, who I don't know, but is apparently a famous DJ. Kendrick Lamar was there, although I didn't get to see him. Yeah.
He was?
Yep. Why? Maybe because it's near Compton. I don't know. Like, maybe he still hangs and does that. But there's a... were a lot of celebrities there. So he definitely was one where people were basically just... As we're sitting there talking... And the reason I was hanging out with him is because we have a mutual friend. So we were all kind of like hanging out as, you know, buddies or whatever. Not that I'm his friend or anything, but you know, you get the point. Like I wasn't there like, hey, can I take your picture?
Right.
But literally every 5 seconds, somebody would come up and like, you know, try to interrupt the conversation. And it gets to the point, even at an event like that, where it's like, you're in, I mean, not everyone got invited to this. It wasn't like a big deal. It was like a very kind of VIP event. You know, it still is happening. So I definitely learned, like, I never want to be that famous. Never.
Can you imagine not being able to finish conversations because you're interrupted every 5 seconds?
Yeah, so it was us three sitting there on the couch, and him and the other guy, who's also named Ben, are, like, running buddies, and they've known each other for years. They both live in Manhattan, or, you know, one's in Brooklyn, one's in Manhattan. But anyways, so they're, like, catching up about, like, hey, how's the new baby? You know, oh, yeah, well, we're thinking about having our second kid also, and... You know, like all three of us are about the same age in very similar situations, like life wise, things like that, like families and stuff. So we were talking about that stuff. We weren't talking about all the other like it, to me, it seems superficial if you meet somebody that's famous for something to just want to talk about that thing with them.
Thing,
like,
yeah.
I'm sure they're over it. Right. Like, even if I ever had a chance to hang out with Elon, I probably wouldn't talk at all about Tesla or space stuff. I just wouldn't be interested, you know, because that's already out there. I'd be so much more interested in the other side, the thing we don't hear. So, yeah, it definitely, like, it, for me, I like the attention when I get people like, hey, can I take a picture, which I definitely get a lot of at these events. But for him, it's just like, it has to be just exhausting, you know? Like, he had that vlog in Warsaw, Poland. He's, like, in Warsaw, Poland at, like, 3 a.m. riding around, and people are chasing him down the street. And you're like,
Michael
dude.
Jackson, man.
You're like, that's... It's just, yeah, it must get tired, I think. So.
Okay, but so back to the technology.
Cool dude. Yeah. Okay, so the tunnel thing that they made, the original plan was you would drive your car onto this electric skate, and then that skate would go down an elevator, and then the skate would transport you on this autonomous, you know, kind of network of skates. And your car wouldn't be driving. It would just be sitting on there. It would take you to your destination. You'd pop back up. The elevators come and go in about the size of two parking spaces. So you could put them all over the place instead of having massive stations where you have to like get on. You could just have them all over neighborhoods or whatever. So you're kind of reducing that last mile of transportation. That was the original plan. Then they got a lot of criticism. So they're like, oh, well, yeah, you have to be rich and own a Tesla to take it, right? And so they said, okay, yeah, you got a point. Let's make these pods where pedestrians, you know, or just people without cars can just roll onto them and then it would take them, and that they would prioritize the development of that. Well, that plan also has changed. And now what they're doing is they're outfitting a Tesla Model X with these little like training wheels that pop out from the front of the car and kind of hug the sides of the tunnel, of the track. And they still are going to have an option for people that can't afford or don't have, for whatever reason, a Tesla.
I don't know why you wouldn't have a Tesla.
Right, yeah, yeah. But point being, like, you don't have to own a Tesla to take it.
Right.
Because that would be like wrong in a lot of ways. You literally are making expressways for you and your rich friends. So now the pod will be a Tesla, and it will be driven autonomously. They say go up to 150 miles per hour. We'll have lots of exits, lots of tunnels. And the interesting thing I thought was the throughput. So if a regular car on the highway, if you're traveling, you know, with recommended speeds and all that, should go one car every 2 seconds. Yeah, and this will be one car every 0.9 seconds is what Elon was tweeting yesterday about it. So that means they could get about 4,000 cars per hour through a tunnel, right? Through a segment. That is a big improvement. It's like 77% increase of throughput of cars compared to a regular highway. Then if you take into account the cost difference of adding a lane to a highway, it's a tremendous, it's like a 96% savings. So you're getting a 77% increase in throughput with a 96% savings in cost. So, you know, the math works out really well to where if they could deploy these tunnels, and one of the things that they talk a lot about, or he talked a lot about that I thought was interesting, was the drilling, the actual like process of making the tunnel should not disturb anybody. In fact, they said that when the boring machine broke through the other side of the tunnel, which is like in a neighborhood, the neighbor who lives next door didn't even stop watching TV. That's how like little of a disturbance it was. I would love to interview that guy and hear his side of that. But point being, they should be able to make tons of these tunnels all over the place relatively quickly and relatively cheaply, and not disrupt things like existing roadways or landscapes or those kind of things. So I thought it was really that was actually a really interesting takeaway I had, was you can add capacity to your transportation system without disrupting the current system and do it in a much cheaper and more efficient way. So all in all, like all those things combined make it seem like a really attractive option. I'm very curious about the regulatory side of it, because obviously that has to be a huge challenge. And then the other side of it has to be just the capacity of having these Teslas everywhere. like how are you actually going to, like, it would not shock me if the first, like, if people can't actually drive their own cars in it for years, and it's only for kind of pedestrians or, you know, people not driving vehicles. I would not be shocked if it was like just their private fleet for the first few years of it operating. So, but they do have four projects underway already. And so it's not like some kind of, you know, vaporware kind of thing. It's like really starting to take shape. And that's what the event was, to show off that technology, kind of lay out all these details and, you know, give a very select few a test ride, because not everyone got to ride in it.
So let's start off with the what's that called? Not the fly in the wall, the elephant in the room. Yeah. Those skates are the deployable. What? You're going to have to start outfitting cars now with that. Okay, I didn't like the skate idea of like, well, now you drive your car into it. Now I'm the biggest fan of the old skate version, where any car could go on there. And, you know, the old skate idea, you could have an internal combustion engine go on there, turn off. It could have sensors that say, turn off your car. You know, and if you turn it on, it'll, you know, beep at you or something. You could use that to make a more green transportation system for existing cars, even. Anyone could use it with any size vehicle. And now all of a sudden we went to like, oh, now it's only going to be for EVs that have these training wheels that are now.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Wasn't he saying that it had to be autonomous too? A fully autonomous electric vehicle?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that does make sense, because if you're traveling that fast in that close range, you know,
drafting speeds and stuff.
Well, the car needs to be able to react quicker than you can. So it definitely needs to be autonomous, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know about fully autonomous, but, you know, it needs to have those kind of things. And a lot of companies are coming out with those. It's not actually that complicated of a technology, I don't think.
I just think that's, to me, that's going to be a nightmare. I can't believe they even are remotely considering that being the option, as opposed to, like, if they own the skates and maintain the skates and have all of the skates have the same infrastructure, you know, they're built on the same platform, they control that then and can ensure safety. You know, you could charge a car in order to get to it, just like a supercharger, almost like it's an app on your phone or something. When you pull up, you say, yep, I want in on this one. Boop, it charges you $6 or whatever to get from point A to point B. And now we're looking at this does not make sense to me.
Mm. Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. And go ahead, Joe.
My big thing is, I don't think it fixes the problem that it's supposed to be fixing. If the only cars that can go in there are electric, autonomous cars with these training wheels on it,
yeah,
how is that going to fix traffic? Like, how many actual cars out there are going to be able to use this thing?
Well, that was the point of what I was trying to say about them having their own fleet. Like, they would have to supply thousands and thousands of cars for this. Otherwise, I'm not going to get that installed. I don't know. Right. Like,
yeah, exactly.
It'll be a very select few people that opt for that, right? That right. live in these areas where it's available. And not to mention that not only does it have to be electric and autonomous, it needs to be able to travel at 150 miles per hour, which...
So, I didn't even think about that.
So in my video, I just did yesterday about it, I was talking about that. It's like, okay, you're saying it's not a walled garden, that any, you know, whatever, just has to be, meet these requirements. You're like, yeah, that's so... Like, and even I've never actually even seen a Tesla go 150 miles per hour, to be fair. My buddy Dan did this thing in Utah every year where they have some charity event where you take your car out on this stretch and you go for like 2 miles as fast as you can. And he was in his Model X and he got it up to 142 or something before it actually slowed down. Like something kicked in. So I'm like, I still have never seen it, you know? So, yeah, we'll see.
Well, and something else, I mean, and maybe I just didn't see it because we haven't gotten that many or that much footage from inside a tunnel, but I haven't seen any, like, escape hatches or anything. So, like, I'm sitting here imagining you got all these cars, like, back-to-back, 150-whatever miles an hour, and then one car has one of those skates come off or something. Like, something goes wrong with it.
Yeah.
How does emergency personnel get to it? How do they get out of there? It doesn't even look like there's room to open the door.
Yeah, no, there's not. No. No, once you're in, you're in, yeah. Well, and then, you know, thinking about it as someone with a kid also, what if my kid is freaking out, throwing stuff, and we just need to pull over, you know? It depends. But then I guess it depends how long you're going in the tunnel, right?
I'm guessing you'd have exits quite frequently, you know, in a real legitimate system. There'd be, you know, yeah.
Yeah, so the way I kind of, you know, the takeaways I had are like, I love the concept. I love the idea. I like of what they're trying to solve and what they're trying to do. It sounds like it's still very early days, and we may see some more iterations of this. Because like all what you guys are pointing out, I mean, the skate idea, I thought, again, I'm with you, Tim. I thought that was a much better idea, because then I'm not even using my car's energy, right? Because like this takes up a ton of energy. What if I don't have enough charge to get where I need to go? And I just
150 mile an hour, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Like imagine crazy. I have a flat tire. Or I run out of charge in the middle of the tunnel. Just somebody's going to have to push me? Like, how am I going to? There's so many questions, I think, about that still that make me think that we're going to see some more changes here before this becomes even close to reality.
And it's kind of like, Tim, your issues, or not issues, but what you've said about the BFR, how every single time we hear something new about it, it's changed a little bit more. And it's like, it's just so fluid that who knows what the end product's actually going to be.
Right.
Like it's almost to the point where I see what they revealed at the boring tunnel thing, and I'm like, so? Like, I put no weight on it at this point, because it's like, who knows what it's actually going to be.
I'm the same way. I don't have a lot of weight on what we actually saw the other night, because first, one of the things I don't get is why, like, there's no rush for this. They weren't, like, trying to round up a certain, like, funding before the end of the year, I don't think, or something. But why did they rush? Like, if the pavement was really bumpy and crappy, like, why rush it? You know, like, what were you pushing it for? Why don't you wait until it's perfectly silky smooth? All your demonstrations and of all the press are going to be, this thing was crazy. I didn't even feel it. I'm flying through this tunnel like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah.
You know, instead it's like all the things, people jumping around, jittery, and have awkward experience.
And they wouldn't let anybody film inside the tunnel either. So
did you see the one with like CNBC or MSNBC, that lady?
Gail King, yeah. But notice the footage, the filming was inside the car, right? So you didn't see the tunnel. You just saw the inside of the car, their reaction.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So filming the actual tunnel during the ride wasn't allowed at all.
So I have to say, I think the key takeaway here is kind of like BFR and all that evolution, like you were saying, Joe. BFR, the main thing they had to figure out is the engines, a methane-powered engine, and then they need to figure out kind of what can be built around that engine once they get the engine figured out and all that stuff. This is like they needed to learn how to bore a tunnel and make an efficient way of actually tunneling, because it is, fundamentally, it totally makes sense. You can stack these things, like he's saying, 3D. You know, you can have like 16 lanes underground and not disturb a single thing above ground. It totally makes sense.
Yeah.
But then the actual execution of it at the end of the day will probably change a lot. At least I really hope so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My, The other thing that bothered me is like this totally fits into the narrative of the anti-Elon folks that he overpromises and underdelivers.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, with the Model 3 thing, you know, he announced it as a $35,000 car. I think it's going to happen eventually. But of course, all the detractors are immediately jumping on like, that doesn't exist. He said there was going to be this thing and it doesn't exist. But this was just like the most extreme version of that, because like he gave this grand vision, which I think is interesting. And then he shows like, oh, we got these little rinky dinky wheels, yeah, and it only goes 40 miles an hour and the road's kind of bumpy and you can't open your door. And I was like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
that's just so far away from what you had originally, you know, proposed.
Yeah,
but it is just a proof of concept. Let's just be clear about that.
The thing that you touched on there, Tim, also, and somebody commented on my video about this. So I focused on what Elon said this was meant to be, and that was a solution to traffic. Now, in the presentation, they also mentioned that the tunnels could be used for other things. So they said utility lines, water systems, mm-hmm, etc. And so in my video, when I analyze this, and even what I was just talking about, the cost savings I was talking about there on this was related to building a lane on a highway. If you compare this, the cost and what they're able to do here compared to other tunneling, other boring systems, it's like an order of magnitude or multiples of that like difference. Mm-hmm. Like there are some tunnels out there that cost like over $3 billion per mile. These guys are $10 million per mile.
Yeah.
So if you're looking at it as like, I kind of see two things. There's the, will this solve transportation problems and traffic and rush hour and et cetera, et cetera? Maybe, right? Like I think that's like where it's headed. But what we saw, I'm with you guys, it definitely was not this grand futuristic vision. But is this a massive leap forward in tunneling technology and that kind of thing? Absolutely, 100%. So it's kind of like you're building a technology, but... And you have a proof of concept of what it could be used for. I would not be shocked at all if like the Boring Company totally succeeds and we don't ever see this transportation system at all. Like mm-hmm, if it turns out that there are other use cases here which are fantastic, like utilities, water, et cetera, and they help in so many other ways, but it has nothing to do with reducing cars on the road. So when I did my analysis, I was like, okay, Elon keeps preaching about this is what it's meant to do. But on the other side, you're looking at it going, well, this is just kind of, it's like the internet, you know? Like, you didn't predict what the internet was going to do, but you knew that putting in that plumbing was going to help in so many, like, unforeseen ways.
Yeah.
So I kind of see, like, the Boring Company has two sides to it. I definitely think it'll be successful from a boring standpoint in making tunnels. Whether or not it'll be successful from this, like, transportation thing, I think there's still a lot to be seen.
I agree, Joe. This is a little bit of fodder for people that just think Elon's full of absolute garbage. Because, you know, if you so far look at the Hyperloop and how it's evolved, so far they have a little tiny test track, you know, that students shoot some cars through, you know, some vacuum maglev cars through. And people go, see, they can't, this is stupid. They're just hoaxing you. You know, it's not in existence. And then they go, yeah, this transportation thing. No, they just stuck training wheels to a car. Like, it is fodder for those people, and I get it. Like it's in the big giant retro scheme. Of course, it's a proof of concept. It's very early on. It has a lot of glitter around it, a lot of magnificence, you know, in a sense. But it's like I think in 10 years we'll be like, well, I mean, they just had to prove that it could fundamentally work, and now we have this because of it. So thank you, it worked.
Right.
Just like when my big thing is, so far Elon doesn't really fail when he says he's going to do something. It might like stumble a few times and go upside down and then like almost go bankrupt 20 times and then crash on the deck of a giant football field sized ship a dozen times. Eventually he's so persistent that things just get done, and I think this falls right into that category of like they're working on the fundamentals of it,
yeah,
and eventually it's going to be awesome.
Yep. Yep.
That's my opinion.
So speaking of crashing things on ships and rockets that didn't quite take off.
That's your segue?
I need to get better. I apologize for everyone.
Crashing things on ships?
Well, like failing to launch is where I was going.
Very different things.
That's failing to land.
It's, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Failing to land.
Let me find the right thing so I'm not pulling up the wrong.
Well, hey, just real quick while you're pulling that up, one thought that I had about this tunnel thing, like just the footage that I did see, it's kind of hypnotizing of the driving through, just like that sort of Star Wars light speed effect kind of thing, just bit from this tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of made me wonder, like, depending on how long these things are, I mean, that one's only a mile long, but I wonder if it would kind of drive someone crazy.
It could.
Well, you know what I mean? Like, psychologically, I think that can kind of mess with you if you're just going through this tunnel and all you see are these, you know, just this point of light at the end, you know?
I've drove through, like, something like a 35-kilometer-long tunnel in Switzerland once, and they had pull-offs to make sure that you don't, like, so you can stop if you need to. Like, big parking places and stuff, because it is hypnotizing, and it is really, they even say, like, if you have problems, like, keep going, they have, like, encouraging signs.
Oh, funny.
And stuff. And, like, you're almost there. I know you're, like, worried or whatever. Like, all this stuff. Like, psychological, like, boosters.
Yeah, look at that. Like, if you sat and looked at that for 20, 30 minutes or something, like, that would start to get claustrophobic, I would imagine.
Yeah.
There's a road, and I don't have this in front of me, but there's a road somewhere in Australia that apparently is so straight and desolate, and there's no scenery, and there's nothing to look at for, like, hundreds and hundreds of miles or kilometers or whatever, that literally people go insane.
Well, that's
like, across the outback.
That's the road that they can do truck trains. Have you seen that, where they have, like, a semi-truck with, like, six trailers behind it? Because it's such a, like, long stretch of road, and it doesn't have to, like, do anything crazy, that it's just, like, straight, and they can just do that. Because it just works.
The platooning of the Tesla Semi kind of concept, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm going to pop over. I'm going to get back into our subject of Scrubvember here. So this week we were promised on multiple occasions, like, some of the most launches in existence, really, almost at once. At one point, I think both Monday and Tuesday at some point, due to the launch schedules, it was like within a 24-hour period, we were supposed to have had five rockets take off from Earth, four of which were orbital, and four of which, and then one of which was a suborbital launch. So we were supposed to have a Soyuz launch out of South America, which is really weird. That's, by the way, this is a whole thing. Soyuz, a Russian rocket, being launched by European Space Agency in South America,
in, like, French Guiana.
Yeah, out of the French Guiana, exactly.
Yeah, yeah, I know they do. They do launch.
So it's so weird to me. That's like the rocket already goes around the world before it even goes around the world forever. You know, like,
yeah, there you go.
It's super weird. So we had that. There was also India launched their heavy lift, the GSLV rocket. On that ended up being on Tuesday our time. But then, of course, we were supposed to have a Falcon 9 launching a GPS satellite. We were supposed to have a NROL-71 on top of a Delta IV Heavy out of Vandenberg. And Blue Origin was supposed to do a suborbital hop in their facility in Texas. The three from the United States have scrubbed over and over and over again. And this is just, I have this mantra of scrubs are cheaper than booms. But to be honest, like, for me, like, it doesn't matter because, I mean, so what? I had to get up a little bit earlier than I normally would have, like, almost every day this week. Get all ready, like, totally turn on lights and get everything ready, and then be like, oh, scrubbed. I'm like, ah! You know, I'm sure my frustration is 1/100th that of the people that are, like, on console, you know, and the people that are, like, literally out there on the pad. All these people on all these different launches are probably, like, this is the stuff that's hard, especially, like, pre-holidays. You're probably trying to get it out there before the end of the year and all these things and all this stress. So I totally get it. You know, I mean, it's funny, too. You know, all these people in YouTube will be like, no, why? And they're so upset. I'm like, you know, so imagine their frustration. Now try working on that vehicle and being part of that launch team. That's got to be frustrating. I've been on the side of, you know, being at launches when you're a photographer and you have a scrub. That's hard as a photographer, too, because you have to go out there, you set up equipment. Sometimes they make you take it back down just to do it all over again the next day. Recharge batteries, reset equipment, do all these things. It's grueling sometimes. And, yeah, so this is just every rocket scrub for a different reason. Blue Origins was like ground systems, so they're now going to have to totally reevaluate some things and get them. They're going to try launching beginning of 2019 now, so they pushed back weeks. SpaceX has had weather to deal with most of the days. At first, it was a sensor reading that was quote unquote out of family, which means like one sensor was basically like totally off the charts or not within the same parameters as all the others. So they reevaluated it and they got it out to the launch pad. And then now the next two times it's tried launching, the weather has been awful. As a matter of fact, there's tornadoes in Florida right now, like full blown tornadoes.
Tornadoes like, or hurricanes?
Tornadoes, not hurricanes.
What?
Tornadoes. Not sharknadoes?
They might be sharknadoes.
Watch out for those.
Florida.
But, Florida does have tornadoes, actually. And right now, specifically, they have a lot. There was like multiple tracked tornadoes going like basically right through central Florida.
Wow. Interesting. Yeah.
And this is while a $500 million GPS satellite is out on a launch pad on top of a $60 or $90 million rocket or whatever it is. Yeah. Can you imagine the footage if a tornado came through and took out a rocket on the pad?
That'd be nuts. Do they
at
have
that
to...
point, they should just go ahead and launch it in the tornado.
Yeah.
Awesome like, footage.
Get it out of here.
Let's burn this candle. Do they have to take it down if they scrub? Like, does the rocket come off the pad or does it stay there?
Depends. And so sometimes if they reset by a day, they will just keep it vertical. But the vehicle has this, there's a transport erector, it's called. And so it's actually really easy to take up and put down. That's, hopefully this isn't the most phallic thing you're going to see today.
if you're watching on YouTube, you're seeing him explain.
Hopefully it's not.
Wait, I don't know. Depends on your outlook in life.
You don't know my
life. You live.
You don't know my life.
Yeah, you so don't anyway. Know me.
Okay, so they roll this baby out of the pad like this, and then with some giant, like huge, like hydraulic lifty things, they are able to stand up rockets. So they're actually able to raise and lower that thing and get it all the way back in the. Horizontal integration facility, at least for SpaceX, relatively quick within like a certain matter of time. Now, the other version, ULA, they do vertical integration. So their launch pad has cranes and a tower, and that one of the towers is permanent, and they actually like assemble the rocket there on the actual launch mounts. And then they actually, especially at this launch pad, there's LC-37 that the Delta IV launches out of. There's also LC-6E out of Vandenberg, which is where this current Falcon Dragon Delta IV Heavy is trying to launch out of. And those both of those buildings have this weird system where there's a tower and then there's a building that's on top of it that rolls away. And it goes like 200 meters away or something. Like it rolls crazy slow. So you're rolling a like 90 million pound, 45 metric ton or something. I don't know. Way more than that.
A building.
Yeah, it's just a giant. You're moving a building.
So is it full of fuel? Don't they fuel after it's vertical?
Yeah.
So if I'm scrubbing and it's full of fuel, I have to like defuel.
Yep. They
and then
them.
Before, so I can't like. Have it full of fuel and just say, "Oh, let's just tip it over."
No.
They'd be like,
they fully detank and get it back to safe pressurizations and everything.
Yeah.
Before they do anything, and especially so, a lot of times, say the Delta IV Heavy out on the pad, the fuel in it is cryogenic. It's very cold. It's liquid hydrogen. Has in order to be a liquid, has to be like I don't even know how many hundreds
-300 Celsius.
Yeah,
or something.
It is. I think it's like 300 something. Maybe even 400 degrees Celsius. It's crazy cold. And so it only exists as a liquid for X amount of time before it boils off. Mm-hmm. So they do recycle it and they pump it back out and go back to chilling it and keeping it in the liquid state relatively quick.
Minus 196 Celsius, minus 321 Fahrenheit.
Okay, so, I was off.
So apparently it's not a good idea to use for a pool party.
Gosh, can you imagine
the internet?
So basically we had a bunch of scrubs for different reasons, and I think I'm at fault here, because literally just last week I was sitting there bragging about how, guys, we have been so lucky, we've had so many launches all in a row, no scrubs. This is just awesome. Like, everything's working out great. And I was telling them all these stories of how, like, back in my day, especially early 2016, when SpaceX was learning how to do the cryogenic fuels, the super chilled blocks and the chilled RP-1, they were scrubbing like 3 or 4 times per launch every time. And it was really frustrating. So I was like, back in my day, we scrubbed all the time. And then literally the next like week was just, it's just been all pure scrubs.
Yeah. And there were 3, right?
Yeah, there's 3 that continually are getting pushed around.
So bad things happen in 3s, right?
I guess so. But there is one rocket that did make it off of the pad successfully. And that was, of course, our friends down in New Zealand had no problem getting theirs off the ground. They launched, they had a beautiful, just gorgeous launch down in New Zealand of their Electron rocket. This is, of course, one of my favorite little vehicles right now. It's all black. It's carbon fiber. It's tiny. You can push it around with your hands because it's so lightweight. It's an awesome rocket. It has 9 engines on the first stage and 1 on the upper stage, just like a Falcon 9, but a baby version. And I had my friends down there, Trevor Malman and Brady Keniston were down there to take pictures of it. So they flew from the United States to take pictures of this rocket, and it ended up going off. They did actually delay a few times. So I guess they're not no one is free from scrubs. But they ended up having a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful launch on Saturday, our time, Sunday, their time. With NASA, they took up 10 CubeSats for NASA for this new venture class service, which is where they, like, universities and stuff can apply for these grants, and then NASA basically pays to get their CubeSats up in space on these small launch vehicles. So it's pretty cool. It was a really successful mission. So at least one rocket did get off the ground, and Rocket Lab is really stepping up their game. They're going from when I was talking to Peter Beck down in New Zealand, the CEO, he basically kept saying, you know, our big thing is cadence. We're going to be launching these at an unprecedented rate. He said that over and over. He's like, we want to be able to, you can call us up and we can be launching your payload within 2 months, which is unheard of right now. If you want to fly something, you're waiting years right now. I mean, like, he was even talking about weeks potentially in the future, but that's unheard of. And now we're already starting to see that payoff. And they're going from, they just launched November, they launched December, and they already have their January rocket up on out there testing, ready to launch in January. I mean, we're talking about a pace and a cadence that no one has really ever seen before. So it's really
cool.
Well,
I remember you and I were talking about, I guess it was after you talked to Peter, that I knew that was their plan, was to launch like every week or, you know, every other week or something like that. But, you know, the business time launches kept getting pushed back and pushed back and pushed back, like almost all of 2018. And I mean, I guess a little bit of doubt was starting to creep in on me, but you were like, dude, they have a stockpile of rockets just ready to go. As soon as that one gets up, it's going to be one right after another. And that's pretty much what it's been, it looks like. So it's exciting.
Yeah, they had to do some work. You know, they had to redo. They actually were redoing their entire flight computers and all the programming on their flight controllers for their engines. That's a big task.
Sure.
They saw something off nominal literally as they were getting ready to launch its business time back in, what was that, March or April?
Mm.
Yeah.
And it was only one engine having this error. Out of all, you know, there's really 10 engines on the stage. One showed an error once. This shows how mature and ready this company is. They saw one little out of nominal error on a computer, on an engine. They pulled the entire vehicle down. They stripped it apart. They realized if we see anything like it's worth us totally investigating this. They ended up redoing all of that system. So it's a more robust system. And now that they've got it figured out, they did the legwork. Now they're ready to just be cranking those babies out. And that's exactly what we're seeing. It's really impressive because I think a less mature company would have been like, you know, it's 1 of 9. Like, what are the odds of it actually happening in flight? And if it does, no big deal. But they're like, nope, we're addressing this now so that we never have to think about it again.
Mm-hmm.
Really cool.
So when I'm looking at that list from your website of all the launches that are going up, I feel like the whole new space race thing is on. And it's just like there's launches every other day from someone. They're just constantly launching stuff. But then it's something that I've only been really paying attention to recently. Mm-hmm. So I'm asking the nerd here, like, Is it just me, or are we like launching stuff at an unprecedented level? Like, I mean, does this even, like, if you compare it here with, like, say, the 80s, when, like, a lot of people think that was when the space shuttle was going up all the time, and that's when you saw, I mean, we're not seeing as much manned flight maybe as we used to, but, like, I don't know. What's your take on it?
Here's my take. Great question. And
oh, we got
you
charts.
Are right. That is a good observation. So we saw our all-time low was the early 2000s. I guess unless you consider the 50s before we knew how to fly rockets. So it went up. The highest point ever was 1965. Mid-Gemini program, space race was full-blown, going crazy. And that was the busiest launch year to date, 120 successful launches in a year. But that being said, look at this. We had 105 this year. So we're coming back up on that. And a lot of that is, yeah, we're flying more often. Our payloads are, in general, shrinking and reducing in cost a lot. When we start doing global internet constellations, you know, SpaceX is talking about launching 4,000 satellites for global coverage. So is like one, I think it's OneWeb or One World OneWeb, I think. I need to do some research on this. I got to do a video about global internet constellations. But when we start launching those, yeah, look at this. There's 174 planned launches for next year. That will smash the record. And of course, looking into like 2020, we don't have any, a lot of those launches aren't actually on any manifests yet. But we can expect that to be super, super high too as we start learning about them as they get closer. So yes, overall launches is at an all-time high, at least as far as, let's see, 2008, and the last time it was this high was like 1987 or so. So we're at like a 30-year high of orbital launches, which is awesome. So the public's starting to pay more attention. There's definitely a new interest in rocket launches. I certainly share that excitement. I'm pretty, you know, I'm only 5 years into this myself. So for myself, I've been seeing rocket launches increase a lot. You know, and it's, of course, a little bit of that phenomenon. Is it like, am I paying attention more? Yeah. Or is it actually an increase? Yeah, just like, you know, Tesla's spotting a Model 3 at first was like, oh, my God, was it I'm paying attention?
And now they're everywhere. Yeah.
Yeah. Or are they just all over? And the answer is both, really.
Of course, anytime you get a new car, suddenly you see that car everywhere. Yep. So
we need a name for that. I'm sure some psychologist somewhere has.
There is a name for that.
Okay. Do we know what it is?
Last week I talked about Dunning-Kruger. This week it's the Bader-Meinhof phenomenon.
There it is. I knew. See? Anytime I need...
I always get those confused, but that's Bader-Meinhof. When like you suddenly start seeing something everywhere when you first see it.
Or paying attention to it.
Yeah, it's like, hey, you have the same phone as me. Like, oh, wait. Yeah.
There's only like five phones out there. Oh, so okay. That chart that you were just looking at, what I find interesting about it is obviously there was just a butt ton of launches back in the 60s and early 70s. Well, that was the political space race between the U.S. and Russia. That was superpowers, you know, measuring their genitalia. And and then it kind of fades away. Why? Because Soviet Russia went away. Mm-hmm. Or the Soviet Union went away, I should say. And so then it starts to go back up again, and that's private space space flight starting to take over. And now it's starting to, like, accelerate at a pace that didn't even exist back in the day.
And this is exactly what a lot of, you know, economists and, you know, people think is oftentimes that to get a big project started, it takes government funding, you know, highways, railroads, all these things take government spending. But at some point you hand it off over to the commercial sector and let the private sector compete. Then once it's commercially viable, and it is now commercially viable, it's now commercially profitable. And we are seeing it just launch up at a crazy, crazy pace, which is really cool.
Yeah. I made that same argument in my video about fusion. Mm. That it's something that takes public funds to get off the ground, like a big Manhattan Project kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But then once it's up there... Actually, Manhattan Project is not a good, example because we don't have, like, private nuclear weapon companies.
I hope not,
thankfully.
That we know of.
Yeah, you get my point.
Yeah. Although, did you know about that kid? There was, like, a Boy Scout... That built a nuke in his... Was it a nuke or just a nuclear reactor?
It was a reactor, yeah.
Fusion.
He built one in his garage.
And he became really radioactive. Like, he didn't shield it very well.
Did he do it? Was that in your video? Is that where I...
No, I haven't talked about it, but I've had people want me to talk about it.
But this
you
was
should
a
do
kid...
a video about radioactive Boy Scout.
Yeah.
Well, but, probably want some. But isn't he working for NASA now, that kid?
I think he straightened up pretty good. I mean, because they realize he's a wonder kid. He's like a
he's Dr. Manhattan now.
Yeah. No, he did a TED Talk about it, and what was he, like 14 oh, okay. when he did it or something?
Yeah.
Yeah, but it was fusion, right? The one we don't actually yeah. have,
Wait.
Right?
No, I think it was just a regular fission reactor.
Right, right. Yeah. I thought it was the one, which is the one that takes more energy than it gives back? Fusion?
Fusion.
Yeah.
Right
yeah.
now, anyway. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I thought that's what it was. Like, he created a mini scale of that, but obviously it didn't, like...
I thought it was a regular fission.
Like, fission? No.
It was a science project or something.
Let's let Joe do a video on it, because that...
Yes.
When we'll all learn about it. Joe,
let me write that down.
Yeah, we're just like your comment section now. Do a video on this now! Now where you're in person whispering in your ear, you have to do this.
I'm going to change my channel just to chicken sandwich reviews now after.
Dude. I'll collaborate with you on that.
Yeah, that's see? Awesome. See, we have so much in common.
It's just Chick-fil-A versus that other company, and those are the only chicken sandwiches you review for some reason.
I mean, that's like a Nissan Leaf versus a Tesla Roadster. It's just not even, you know.
That was the joke.
Yeah.
So before we talk too long about chickens, Joe, you were going to talk about another exciting space thing that has nothing to do with chickens.
I posted on Twitter, I believe, the selfie that the InSight lander took of itself, saying, "Is it just me, or does this look like a duck?" Because it looked like a duck. The cone at the front of it looked like a bill. It was orange colored, and it had little bolts where the eyes would be, and the little circular wings. You know how ducks have circular wings? Okay, that was a stretch. But I thought it looked like a duck. So that's how good I am at segueing. So yeah, so NASA's InSight lander landed a couple weeks ago, recently?
A couple weeks ago. Only right? a few, like at most a month ago. It wasn't very long.
We talked about a month ago. Big deal, but there's some news. We're following it to see what's going on. They just put their first instrument down. Yes, okay.
And you beat me to it. Yeah, it does kind of look like a duck looking up at the looking
it
up
looks
the camera
like
going,
a duck. Quack, quack, quack.
Wait,
it's got little,
where,
where the
okay, so if you guys are just listening, we're looking at the photo here. So where is the bill? This part?
The orange part. No, the orange hexagonal thing right there. That's a bill.
So it's looking at me, and then here are the eyes?
Yes.
Exactly.
Got it.
I think that's spot on. I wouldn't have thought that, but now that I see it, it's hard to not see.
Now you can't not see it.
Wow.
It's like a the NASA duck lander.
Especially if it's more like its wings are folded in, you know. They aren't sprawled, they're folded in, but it's flapping them kind of.
Yeah.
And it's looking up at you ah!
Like I want to throw some breadcrumbs at it, you know?
Yes. Wow.
Yes.
I'm
not crazy.
That.
But when you
said
the transition from chicken to the InSight lander, I was like, but it is a duck.
See, I'm not the only one at bad segues. That's we should just make a show called Bad Segues where we just try to connect two things.
That's the whole thing. I know we're getting on a tangent here, but on my videos, when you have a sponsor, you got to segue to the sponsor message at the end. There's a whole art to it.
Yeah.
And sometimes I just don't even try. It's just so, today's sponsor has nothing to do with anything I just said. But anyway, I'm sure they appreciate that.
So what happened? By the way, it landed on November 26th. That wasn't too... Yeah, it was about a month ago.
So you got higher than I did. So they put their first instrument down. It's the seismometer, which is one of the most important instruments that they're doing because of the whole point of InSight. They're trying to look down beneath the surface, figure out what's going on under the ground and on Mars. So let's see. So it's called the Rotation and Interior Structure Experiment, or RISE. And the seismometer is called the Seismic Experiment for Interior Structure, or SICE. SACE? Depending on what foreign accent you want to use.
SICE.
There's a picture of it right there. And I don't think they've actually started using it yet because it's kind of tilted right now. They've got a... they got to adjust it to get it. It's on a 2 to 3 degree tilt right now. Mm. It's gonna use its radio waves and whatnot to go into the ground and tell us what's down there. Something that I thought was interesting, according to this article, is that Okay, so it says, on Tuesday, December 18th, inside engineers set up the commands to the spacecraft, and on Wednesday, the seismometer was gently placed on the ground directly in front of the lander, about as far away as the arm can reach, 5.367 feet or 1.636 meters. That's pretty far away.
Yeah, it is, actually.
That's a good reach.
Yeah, that is. That's further away than I thought.
Yeah.
Is it me or says, those little stickers just kind of randomly placed on there?
They look randomly placed. It has these target stickers. That's so the camera can identify the exact and measure the angle and depth and all that stuff using like 3D tracking.
I know. But it's always funny when you see something like this. You're like, really? They just looks like they just kind of threw that together? Is that, you know, went to Home Depot, you got some parts, just wired this up.
It's funny. It's just kind of dangling on a couple of wires there, isn't it?
That's what I mean. Like, it kind of looks... But yeah, I'm sure there's obviously a reason for all of this, but it's just kind of funny when you see it. You're like, huh, okay. Yeah. It's definitely not a consumer product.
And real quick, I do need to correct, Joe, you said it's going to send radio waves. I don't think it does any of that. A seismometer is just a precise measurement of acceleration. Think about like the seismometers on Earth, you know, those things that shake the little needle and measure ground shaking. That's what this is. This is unbelievably sensitive, though. That's what's so crazy about this instrument is it can measure changes in acceleration, yet it had to survive, you know, a rocket launch and re-entering Mars or entering Mars's atmosphere, landing all these like really harsh environments, and yet it needs to be sensitive enough to notice if a butterfly landed on it.
You're absolutely right. So the seismometer allows scientists to peer into the Martian interior by studying ground motion, also known as Marsquakes. So there is an instrument on InSight that is going to penetrate the ground, but this, I guess, is not the actual part.
Yes.
But this is their first instrument that they put down, which
is
actually
really
cool.
You're right that it, in a sense, measures waves, because they can actually, by reading the shake and then feeling and then reading the like echo almost of when – say a Mars quake hits this instrument, they'll be able to read when it would hit like another wall, you know, another section of Mars, and they can read that and measure the interior like volume of it based on like the waves. So it's not producing waves down, but it is reading waves coming from Mars.
Yeah, and it might be a Mars quake from the other side of Mars, but it kind of bounces around the planet and gives this instrument a picture of what's going on inside.
Which is the people that figure that stuff out, man.
Yeah.
What? How?
But this is the first of these instruments. Of all the Mars stuff that we've landed, this is the first one that has a seismometer on it. So
this is also the first one that has a microphone on it. Did you know that?
I don't know if it was the first one, but I knew it had a microphone. Have we started hearing anything yet?
Yeah, they recorded some sound the other day. I didn't realize we'd never heard Mars before, like directly. Its atmosphere is so low that the frequencies are very low, like below what we can hear, because the thinner the atmosphere, the longer the waveforms
get. Yeah, so I guess the compression wave would have to be that much stronger to move the molecules to make the sound. Which would make the very only low tones that you could hear. That's interesting.
So they have to pitch it up 2 octaves to make it almost discernible, really.
Yeah.
But it's still really cool. It's really the first like audio recording from the surface of Mars, which is
some
freaking awesome.
Music on Mars wouldn't be as good, is what you're saying.
It'd be very bassy.
Yeah. Unless you're into that. I don't know.
Maybe.
only dirge metal.
Yes. Some trap bass.
Only, but you're playing like a ukulele. It's like boom.
It'd have to be super loud, right? Because there's not enough air to make, like, you would have to be really loud, wouldn't it?
I think it's the opposite.
Really?
There's not enough air to move your eardrums. Think about like underwater. You know how underwater you can hear someone snap from like across the pool, and it can be like really loud. Yeah, it's hard to like do that underwater. Oh yeah, you can hear someone like tapping. Like it's if you've never noticed that underwater, you can hear so much stuff because the medium is more dense. And same with like stick a piece of a log up against your ear and have someone tap on it at the other end, it directly transfers the energy to your eardrum, basically, you know? And especially if it's pointing on your eardrum, you're going to go deaf real quick.
Right. But it's the air, the atmosphere there is less dense, right? So wouldn't it have to be louder?
Oh, it would. Sorry, the source would have to be louder. Sorry, I misinterpreted you saying like.
Oh, like I would hear it louder. No, yeah, I'm saying like to make the same equivalent sound, it would have to be more amplified or whatever. Yeah,
it would. The source would be producing more energy to be able to audibly hear it compared to here on Earth. Yes. There we go.
Sorry, are we not going to say anything at all about Tim putting logs up to his ears and tapping on it? Is this something people do? Have I missed out on this?
Apparently you guys don't visit the Midwest often enough.
No, here's it's an Iowa tradition, don't you know?
Here's a good example, actually. This is a legit Midwestern example. Probably also a Texas example. Have you ever put your ear on a train track? Be very careful if you do that. Please do not try this at home unless you're like somewhere where you can see 74 miles on either side, 140 kilometers or whatever. Sorry, I just love always giving you some terrible conversion. unless you can see very far away, because I don't want to be responsible for someone listening to a train come and then just get their head crushed by a passing by train. But you can actually hear trains for miles and miles and miles because the sound travels through the tracks.
I kind of want to do a modern day version of this. Like, I don't know if you guys saw Macaulay Culkin's remix of Home Alone, where with like newer technology. But you kind of want to do that, like oh, let's see when the train is coming. You put your ear down. And you're like, what are you guys standing over with his phone? Like, what are you doing? I'm just looking up the schedule. these old ancient things we used to do. It's like, what? Why would you do that? That doesn't even make sense to me.
Or like back in the day, people used to use like an oscilloscope or something to listen to like engine knock. You know, like listen for an engine that's out
now
of tune.
Now you just plug a computer in and it just... And
now it just tells you, oh, I read an error at precisely 4,200 RPM, you know, like... yeah.
Your computer voice is good.
Okay, so I've always been confused. If you wanted to hear into a room through a door, they always say, like, take a glass and put it up to the door. Do you put it with the rim of the glass to the door or the base of the glass to the door so it, like, amplifies into your ear?
That does... Yeah. It Which sounds like that would it? Make more sense.
I actually think you put the rim on the door so that...
And then put it right against your ear and then...
And then you can put the base of it on your ear and that way you have a nice clean... I don't know. Let's test it.
Yeah, Mythbusters.
We only run science channels here.
Yeah. You know, everyone... And then we've talked about having other people on. I love that idea. One person I would love to have on, but I feel like... It would be, you know, the whole concept of like, oh, maybe aliens have came by and they're like, oh, these guys are too dumb. I feel like Mark Rober, I am the biggest fan of, and I would love to have him on here. But because he like was legitimately worked on the Mars rover and stuff, he'd be like, guys, I can't join your podcast. You're too stupid. Like, you just like you just should know these things. We're like, you know,
I think Mark Rober would be awesome. I'm just realizing how great he is, by the way, because of that video he has of the package thief.
The
that
glitter
made me
bomb?
Go down a yeah oh that made me go well, down a rabbit hole of his. He's got some great content.
And did you see the horn thing they made?
I haven't watched that.
Oh, the loudest horn in the world with the air. Yeah.
So my buddy Dan did that video with him, and that he told me about it as they were doing it. I was like blown away. So
oh yeah, the what's inside.
Yeah. So this whole concept was they made this giant air horn, and they went what was it like 2 miles away or something. And based on, they were on walkie-talkies and so they could say, hey, you know, make the sound. And they could time how long it took for them to hear it and then calculate how far away they were. All those things. It's like just amazing. And the whole concept is like why those air horn things are shaped the way they are.
With the bell.
Yeah. Instead of like, you know, different ways of shaping them. Kind of like what you're talking about there, Joe, with that. But
yeah, Mark Rober, I've been watching him for a while, and I saw, I mean, I'm subscribed to him, so I saw that Glitter Bomb video come up, and I was kind of like, yeah, okay. I mean, all of his videos are good, so you know, I immediately watched it, and it was good, and I enjoyed it. But it's okay, just good. To me, it was like that's just a Mark Rober video. They're all awesome, you know.
Yeah.
I was taken aback a little bit by the balls he had to actually like film the people that were stealing the stuff from his porch and putting that on there. He did cover up their faces, but I don't know. It's funny because like it's funny to see a video and then watch it go viral and everybody else is talking about it and you're like, oh yeah, that's
like did thing. You not know about that guy? Like that's just what
do you
he
not know
does.
About him?
Every video is
exactly.
Like. I swear, every video he does, and we can just gush about him for a while here, but every video he does is like. yeah, you know, I had this thing, so I've been working on this project for 8 months. Like yeah. How do you do that every month? Like yeah. I don't get it. Yeah. You know, yeah. and he still has a full time job. About it. He still has a full time job, which is crazy.
Yeah, that's insane. That being said, speaking of real quick before we totally go on beyond this topic, guests though, that is something we've heard a lot of people say. I know, like, everyone wants Scott Manley on here, who'd be awesome. People have talked to me about, like, Amy Shira Title from Vintage Space. I want to bring my friend on, Taylor Morris, who is an expert on prosthetics, because he's a quad amputee. I think we've talked about him briefly on the show. Mm-hmm. But he stays way on top of, like, future prosthetics and really big into, like, human-machine integration, you know, because it's a big part of his life. He would love to be on the show, I think, so... let us know what, you know, if you guys have ideas for people that you think would be really fascinating guests, especially in like a particular futurist-ish field, would be great.
How many comments are going to say Elon Musk?
All of the comments. Of course.
Yeah.
Is there any getting around that?
No.
That's fine.
We got to get a little bit bigger before that can happen.
Yeah. Yeah, we do. Oh, man. What a show. Am I doing this thing that I always do where I...
You kind of, yeah.
But I wrap it. About two-thirds of the way through?
Well, we were going to talk about the Tesla updates.
Where are they in the notes?
Oh, yeah, we missed it.
Oh, not my fault this time. It's going to be a two-thirds outro show. Talk about the updates. Oh, by the way, I have it, but I haven't seen it yet. Like, I got the notification last night.
Yeah. Yeah, so I got mine like 2 days ago, and I haven't had a chance to really play with it yet.
To preface what we're talking about, if you guys aren't aware, there's a new update, well, I don't know if it's a big update. Really cool features for Teslas, Model S, Model X, everything, Model 3. The things there, romance mode, amazing. It plays a fireplace, and then when you tap on it, it starts playing like Marvin Gaye or Sade, like all the kind of lovey-dovey music.
Does?
Yeah, yeah, it's so good. It also turns the heat on while you're doing it. So that's big. The fart mode is really cool, where you can make it fart in different sounds. And there's like six different fart noises. I just posted a video on Instagram of my son this morning taking him to school. We were stopped at a light and I kept doing it. And you can control where the sound comes from. So I kept doing it from his location. And he's like, "Dad, what are you doing?" It was hilarious. So fun. There's also
wait
a new.
Wait till he's dating.
Yeah. there's a new Atari game. I forget what it is. It's like
pole
a racing
position.
Game. Pole position.
Oh,
and,
pole position, yeah.
And you can even pair a controller, like an Xbox controller, so you can play it with that. So now I would not be shocked if we have like a $500 Tesla video game controller for sale soon. Mm. But really, the biggest update I feel is for the Model 3 anyways, is the camper mode. They say keep climate on. And so now, if you guys are unfamiliar, what you do is you click on the AC or whatever, the HVAC system, and there will be a button on top that says keep climate on. So what that does is when you're like done driving, you're in park, whatever, if you get out of the car, you can keep the HVAC system going. So it'll keep the temperature at whatever you set it to. The way to do it is you set it on auto, so it'll automatically adjust heat or cold depending on what it is and just keep it at whatever temperature. So... and it'll run like essentially indefinitely, like until the car runs out of juice, which will take a couple days depending on how much charge you have. So
if it's plugged in, it'll run indefinitely, right?
You know, I would imagine, yeah. I guess
or
I've not.
They might not, have like a 24-hour limit or something on it.
No, I don't think so. I think it'll go as long as it has juice. So I guess if you're plugged in, but yeah. So a lot of people call it pet mode, where you're going in the store and you leave your pet in the car, but you keep the AC or whatever going, so it's nice and comfortable. You could also do that with your kid, probably not recommended. For me, I use it a lot when my son falls asleep in the car and I get home, I'll pull in the garage, close the garage. It's really nice and cool in there. I keep that going to where he's sleeping in the car, taking his nap and I keep the AC going and stuff. So, and then I'll leave the car, sit in our patio and I can hear him if he starts, you know, when he wakes up. But, super useful feature that I've loved on my Model S for a long time now. And now it exists on the 3 as well. Also, if you are camping, you can sleep in your car and, you know, keep the temperature whatever you want it to be.
Finally.
So that's where the name camper mode came from.
Is this not sort of I guess just more of an automatic version of being able to go on the app and set it to whatever temperature you want, like that, say.
Yeah, that only lasts for 30 minutes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it'll shut off after a certain period of time. Also, if you leave the door open, it'll shut off after 30 minutes. So because they don't want it to run forever. Now, there are some other updates that Elon talked about being able to turn on heated seats from the app. I think people in colder climates.
That's awesome.
None of us, apparently. Not even Tim.
I can't wait for that option.
Yeah,
Thank you very much.
But yeah, so other stuff coming. But I think it just goes to show you how fun this company is, right? Like Elon said it before, that the idea behind Tesla is to create these vehicles made to have maximum joy built in. And that I can make my son laugh on command from my car from this new feature is just the greatest thing.
Well, and they're adding a whoopee cushion so that the seat sensor, if someone sits down.
Yeah, that was rumored.
I can't believe they didn't do that off the get-go. Like, you missed a big one there, buddy, because this is one of the most important features of this vehicle, of any vehicle in the 21st century, and you missed the opportunity to use the seat sensor to trigger a fart?
Wow. That could be it. Tesla's going down after that.
Bankrupt.
Yeah.
Nissan Leaf is going to have, for sure, Rivian's doing that. They're all doing it, so.
I wonder if those guys get questions. Like, I would almost love to interview somebody that's like the CEO of somebody, like Audi. Great. CEO of Audi talking about electric cars. So, how will I be able to trigger the fart noises? like Barbara Walters interview.
I was curious, is yours how many levels of sensitivity do your seat sensors have in order to be able to properly change the threshold of fart? Now, I'm curious, because Tesla's touting a 6-level system.
Yes.
Are you guys able to do beyond that, or what's your thing?
Can you shift between dry and juicy farts?
Tesla has 6 different fart noises. How many will you have?
Yeah, that's people
just
range
in a,
like
in a test drive.
The range, the price, the the heated seats, and then number of fart noises. That's going to be like the most common spec sheet that you're going to see starting probably next year.
I'll make sure. So I still have to do the video, the upcoming EVs in 2019. I have all the research. Now I need to add that as a column in my spreadsheet of fart noises.
Yes,
that they support.
That's awesome. Oh, one other thing that they apparently updated that I haven't seen yet, obviously, but the autopilot now, navigate on autopilot, will try to change lanes out of the fast lane. If you're hogging the fast lane, that's a good practice to have that most people don't even know is a thing, especially in Iowa. It seems like people just stay on the left lane. And it moves out of the fast lane, which is smart.
And in California, it's a weird thing because the freeways have 15 lanes and you are constantly merging in and out of the different ones because of on-ramps and off-ramps and stuff. So I don't even know. Like, I think I did see that, actually, when I was driving home yesterday.
It's pretty cool.
Okay, can you explain the navigate on autopilot for me? Like, how does that – how do you turn that on? Because I thought that if you were navigated somewhere, if you were, following a navigation and you turned on autopilot, it would automatically
– There's a button there. Did you not get this update yet?
I got it, but I haven't been able to.
Hang on, beyond the button, I think you have to first enable it under your driving settings, your autopilot settings, which is like, in your quick controls or whatever, go to like the
I thought
thing,
it was automatically there, but you had to, you could change the aggressiveness.
You have to turn it on while in park to navigate on autopilot per profile, too. So your wife and your profiles you have to turn on, because I made the mistake of accidentally having it in like our get out mode or whatever that thing is.
Easy entry
when I first like was so excited to use it, and then I get out on the highway and I'm like, why isn't it turning on?
I had a funny moment with the easy entry. I was dropping after the Boring Company party. My buddy Dan and Zach were in the car, and I was dropping them off their hotel, and Dan is in the seat behind me. He's kind of a taller guy, and he's showing us like a photo he took from the event on his phone, like this, in between me and Zach in the front. And I hit park because I'm at the hotel, and it does easy entry. So he's like this bent over this way, and my seat just like goes like right back into his lap. And they're like, Ben, what are you doing? I'm like, just getting cozy, guys.
Trying to cuddle up.
Yeah, so
you're the guy in the airplane that just like
immediately. Hey, what are you guys doing? So what you do, Joe? Apparently, you have to enable it. Once you do that. When you are navigating somewhere, when you have a navigation route going, and you go into autopilot, there will be a button that says navigate on autopilot. And you just click that, and then it will automatically merge on and off freeways and, you know, change lanes and do all those kind of things.
Okay.
It's getting awesome.
I guess I have to turn that on because I have not seen that pop up yet.
Maybe I just did that immediately when I got it. So, yeah.
The other thing I noticed, I played around with this. I've noticed that it's done such a good job coming, you know, on an off ramp. It starts slowing you down. It actually stops. At least
really?
At like 3 or 4 of the off ramps that I've tried it on, it will come to a complete stop. It'll be screaming at you, touch the wheel! But like it will stop. And even like at the stop sign.
With
I think it's stop
car?
Lights that it's not doing with a car. Or wait,
I'm
what?
Sorry.
No
with,
car
with
in front
or without
of you.
A, okay, without a
no
car,
car
in front of
me. I 100% empty road. There was a stop sign. I did it twice at that exact same intersection, and it stopped both times. There's another one that has a light that it didn't stop at. But I'm thinking they're starting to recognize
that's why,
stop signs, and
that's why Tim's car is in the shop right now.
I haven't driven that thing in 2 weeks. I just said it and forget it. Totally joking.
You know,
totally joking.
Elon did say that too, that they were testing that now with even the beta build of the next one, that it'll stop at those. I think stop signs might be easier to detect than a stop light, honestly.
Yeah.
Because
definitely.
And the thing I was thinking about when I was at CES last year, I went with the Mercedes self-driving team, and they were like, they said, yeah, look up at the light right now. Now look behind it, and all you see are hotels with all the lights in Vegas. And they're like, how is the, like imagine how difficult it is for the car to pick out that red
Which
light.
One?
And then imagine all the different countries in the world that have different shapes and sizes and colors and blah, blah, blah. It's not like they're like this is a distinctive color that no one else can use for any other purpose where it'd be easy to detect for a car, right? It's like, it's common. And so it would make sense to me. I mean, I guess Carpathia would be the guy to talk to, but it would make sense if somebody that was working on it said, yeah, stoplights are really hard, stop signs are easy because it's like a distinctive shape, you know, that sticks out.
Even per lane. You can have a freaking light per lane on a lot of stoplights, you know? So, I mean, that's got to be very difficult.
If and when we get there with Tesla, I actually have the perfect example. So by my house, there is an entrance to the freeway. And so if you're driving on the road, you know, there's 3 or 4 lanes or whatever. And there's a left turn lane to get onto the freeway. There is a stoplight, but that stoplight is just for that lane. So, but sometimes, like even I'll be driving just on the road, and there's not an actual stoplight. There's not an intersection. It's only for that left turn lane. But if you didn't know that, you could very easily interpret that as like, this is a stoplight. I need to stop right here. But it's because it's literally just a light in the middle of the road.
Weird.
It's so. I think this gets to the whole thing about, you know, like full autonomy is like, how is the car going to know that when literally if I took you guys there and you've never seen it, it would be very reasonable for a human to be like, wait, do I stop here or do I go? I don't know what to do.
I still would love, and here's this week's version of why don't they just? Want something. Say that you drive the same route every day. You can on your route. Hit boop, report a problem, you know, or something. And when you get home, when you get to your office, you can review your drive. You can point out things like, hey, here's a stoplight. Let me circle for you what the stoplight is in the vision system. Let me tell you where on the map you disengaged when I wanted you to do this, you know, and have a way to file reports so that they can be consistent. So we can do some of the crowdsourcing, especially on routes that you're very familiar with and that you do every single day. Like, we're going to be as big of an expert on that route as anybody. And maybe you have to pass a thing. Like, maybe there's a system you have to pass in order to unlock that portion of the app or something so that you know to report it in the correct manner and all these things. But then all of a sudden, the data is already way more combed through and saves a lot of work. I don't know.
This goes back to my whole argument that autopilot should be free for everybody because – when you have a failure of the system and you can detect that because the person took over control or disengaged it without like a specific reason, without an obvious reason, those can be very telling signs. And so you'd get so if you think about it, like if you're collecting data in shadow mode, people that don't have autopilot but are driving the cars and you're collecting all that, the person is going to be doing this to the steering wheel all the time, right? And the car is constantly going to be doing this. you don't actually want the car to do that when it's on autopilot, right? You want it just to be straight. So if you're saying like, hey, what our algorithm, our AI, whatever, said it should do versus what the person did, well, the car is saying I should go perfectly straight, but the person's doing this. So you're going to get millions and millions of data points where the computer disagrees with the person. But those aren't actual failures. That's just noise, right? Mm-hmm. But if the person was on autopilot and they jerked the wheel and took over or did something else, that would be a clear signal. So I think if everybody had autopilot, we would get much higher quality data, more signal, less noise, and hopefully that would lead to the models and the algorithms and things becoming, you know, learning faster, I guess is a way to put it. To your point, exactly, right? Without a person actually having to report it, just the act of like you driving would be a signal, would be a report in effect.
Yeah. Hmm. Boom. Autopilot.
Maybe they'll get there.
Let's do that. Let's do all those things.
Why don't they? We did it. I got to wrap because I got to get ready to head out for the day. But we did it, guys. Episode 14.
Yes, solid. 14.
Wow, Joe.
Let's do this.
Did you just release a video today?
I did.
What was it about?
Every Thursday I do. Yeah.
What was it about?
The 5 worst Christmases of all time.
And
it started off as here's some interesting Christmas facts, la, da, 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 right? And then
got dark
looking
real
up.
Quick.
I think people are starting to find that even though I joke a lot, there's a very dark side to me.
A very dark, complex individual.
Go very dark. No, it started as an interesting Christmas facts thing, and then somehow I was like looking up like Christmas tragedies, and it became. Basically, I mean, I say at the beginning of the video, it's like no matter how bad your Christmas is going, no matter how much your in-laws are bugging you, at least your whole family isn't getting murdered like these guys, you know.
You can just use that for anything, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. No matter how much you hate your car.
My arm, I sprained my wrist. Well, at least your whole family isn't getting murdered.
On
Stop
Christmas.
Whining.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Joe, what are you working on, though?
My boss is pissing me off. Well...
What's your next video though that you're working on?
Oh man, it's gonna be a rush job. I've already written the one for the 31st because I'm trying to like give myself a little time to you know breathe. But the one for Monday, I need to finish writing it and record it right after this. But it's on flying cars. Some of the companies are working on sort of piloted drones and stuff.
Did you see the guy just got into an accident? Few days ago,
yeah, it's going to be talked about.
Oh man,
wait, spoiler.
I didn't.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I saw that video pop up. So, you know, quick story or quick quip about it. The guy, one of the CEO founders of a flying car company, crashed and is in serious condition. Hope he's okay. All that, but the timing couldn't have been more ironic because it was like the day Elon unveiled the Boring Company thing where he was talking about how flying cars have all these problems because they crash. It was like, what? like maybe Elon,
well,
I don't know.
What's kind of, it's not funny, but what's the, he wasn't actually in flight mode. He was actually just driving and the car just caught a gust of air and went up in the air.
really?
I think he was like in the process of unfolding the wings or the wings come out or whatever the little transition thing is, but he was just driving and a stiff wind caught him and
boom.
The thing just... Yeah.
I'll take tunnels, thank you very much.
Yeah, right, yeah. Like, that was, again, I don't want to make a joke out of it, but it was so crazy how the irony in the timing of that in the Boring Company. It was just like, you couldn't
That's
have really
crazy.
Drawn that up.
That's nuts. Ben, what are you working on, though?
I want to do the EVs coming out in 2019 video, but I have another video about why I think my argument for why we need 400 plus mile EVs. So I have kind of those two videos in the hopper right now. I'm not sure. Definitely going to get one done before the holidays because I'll be gone for a week. Are we recording next week? I don't think I can record next week. Maybe we can.
I could, but
yeah.
We'll see about what you guys. Worst goes to worse.
I'll be traveling, but I might be able to hop on.
Well,
maybe we'll just be the Joe.
Is that the
and
worst
Tim
thing
show.
If we miss a week? It's the holidays.
That's true. Yeah. We could take a week off, but I just like this show so much.
I like talking to you guys. I like hearing all the dark secrets that Joe has to share.
I could use a break.
I am working on I ended up interrupting canceled part two because I got stuck trying to find footage of a rocket that has almost no footage of it. Kind of stalled me. And in the middle of that, I just saw someone tweet me asking, why does SpaceX's Dragon 2 capsule have fins on it? I was like, oh, that's such a good topic. So I really quickly, in 2 days, shot and edited a pretty nice little in-depth video about why there's fins on the Crew Dragon capsule. And I'm really excited. I'm going to release it here as soon as we log off.
I saw that they just either revealed or there was a photo of the hull with the solar panels on it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was just sexy? I saw a picture of that the other day.
Looks so good. Yeah, it's sitting there. It's out at Cape Canaveral. You know, it's at Kennedy Space Center at the integration facility. Ooh, baby, 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 I can't wait. I'm going to be there.
It's coming up.
Oh, I can't
good times.
Wait. Yes, good times all around. Oh, well, guys.
Happy holidays to everyone.
Yes. Please stay
safe.
Whatever
you might celebrate.
Yeah. Keep the stress levels low. If your family's freaking out too much, just, you know, I don't know, enjoy some podcasts and YouTube channels and tune out.
It could be worse.
It could be worse as we've...
They could all be being murdered.
Happy holidays, everyone.
Happy holidays. As always, leave us a little, some comments, reviews, and be sure and subscribe to us on YouTube, too, even if you just listen to us on things. But tell your friends if they're into futurist stuff to stop on by. And thanks for all your comments and feedback. Well, we'll see you next time in...
Our ludicrous future.
2019.